Section 2, Living Local in a Global Economy. As you read, look for The State's Search for Identity in the New Century, How Agriculture and Traditional Industries Have Coped with the Global Marketplace, Ways Communities Are Evolving to Meet Changing Needs, and the following terms, Organic Farming, Ecosystem. One of the questions North Carolinians ask repeatedly in the new century concerned identity. What would North Carolina lose and gain in the new century? What kind of state would it become as it both welcomed and weathered global change? Tar Heels still drank their cheer wine, munched on their Krispy Kreme donuts, and doctored their barbecue with Texas Pete. They also bought sushi in their grocery stores. For many state residents, old habits and new tastes could be combined. In the early 2000s, Ed Mitchell was particularly worried about the taste of pork. It is not that the Wilson restaurant owner was exactly opposed to the growth of pork processing in the state. Rather, he was concerned that the huge production facilities on most hog farms so rushed the animals toward slaughter and packaging that flavor was lost. And older farmers in the state had less chance to make a living because they could not earn enough per pig to show a profit. So Mitchell borrowed an idea from the tobacco buyout. He began to contract with small farmers to raise pigs the old-fashioned way, with the pigs rooting and snorting in open pens. This, Mitchell argued, would produce a taste that was juicy and full of flavor like the barbecue I remember from tobacco days when he grew up in Pender County. Mitchell was also going against the efficient course most barbecuers were taking, cooking with gas as the heat. Mitchell stuck to wood, hoping newcomer and oldster alike would like it. By 2005, he had become world famous for his work, appearing as a cook on cable networks and operating a Raleigh restaurant. Farming innovations. Other North Carolinians adapted the state's old traditions to find a local niche, a specialized market, in the global marketplace. North Carolina continued to be the second largest producer of Christmas trees in the nation, and most of the Fraser fir stands in places like Ashe County were family-owned and operated. By 2013, almost 40 wineries had been established in the Yadkin River Basin, reviving a craft that had once been a part of the early state's economy. The Maple Hill Farm southwest of Hillsboro had started to bottle its own milk in 1996, selling to more than 50 local markets by 2010. Its ice cream shop, also on the farm, came to be considered one of the best in the nation. At a time when most of America's food comes from international agribusiness, large-scale farming operations, many state farmers began to go small. Many increasingly turned to organic farming, where no industrially produced fertilizers or pesticides are used. Hilltop Farm in Wake County concentrated on the medicinal herb trade that was important a century ago. It harvested valerian root, believed by some to be a sleep aid. Pine Knot Farm in Hurdle Mills, the state's small farm of the year in 2004, raised kale, broccoli, cabbage, and even tobacco. Deal Orchards continued to be a major producer for the Brushy Mountain apple growers, harvesting more than 57,000 pounds. Sweetgrass Dairy near Thomasville made cheese from goat's milk. By 2012, more than 100 vendors sold their produce at state-sponsored farmers markets in Raleigh, Greensboro, and Asheville. Other produce is eaten at newer restaurants. The Magnolia Grill, operating in an old grocery store in Durham, used mostly fresh fruits and vegetables from the state. It was ranked one of the top restaurants in the United States in the early 2000s. More traditional large crop farmers were also working to find a place in the new marketplace. Edward Wheeler, son of a Franklinton tobacco farmer, took the allotment buyout. He worked full-time for an electrical utility company and then went home each evening during growing season to work corn and soybeans. On the other hand, Richard Tyson of Nashville doubled his tobacco acres, hoping to take advantage of the freer market. Industrial adaptations. Traditional industry was also adapting to the new times and needs. The Sara Lee Corporation, which owned the Haynes Company, retooled a Winston-Salem plant to design wearable electronics. These non-woven materials, designed and generated with computer software, produce clothing that meets special needs in extreme settings. The materials were designed with the teamwork of scientists at NC State University. Some of the older industrial families in the state adapted to new needs. The Jordan family of Saxapahaw in Alamance County turned its old rural cotton mill, which had closed in 1994, into apartments as the populations of the Piedmont Triad and Triangle began to grow together. The family put 10 years into the project, then rented or sold most of the housing units in a month. Benjamin Cohn of Charlotte, who grew up in the Greensboro textile family, began a business making custom tables for the conference and boardrooms of large corporations. The materials and workmanship come from all over the world, but the tradition goes back to the state's original furniture makers. Special feature: Carolina people, Rhett and Link. Who could have guessed that drawing on school desks could lead to such worldwide fame? It happened to two young North Carolinians. In 1984, first graders Rhett James McLaughlin and Lincoln Charles Neal III had to spend their recess inside at Bowie's Creek Elementary School as punishment for their misbehavior. Given crayons, Rhett and Link created the first of a long line of mythical beasts. The two BFFs kept their creativity going through high school and college. After rooming together at NC State University, they each worked as engineers for a while, then came back together to produce digital content for the internet. Rhett and Link soon became successful entertainers. Their first show, staged at their homes in Fuquay's Arena, gained a loyal audience by using a wheel of mythicality to let viewers choose the best ending for their madcap stories. This streaming led to even more success with their YouTube show, Good Mythical Morning, where the duo took on typical topics from atypical viewpoints. Some of the subjects included crazy rags-to-riches stories and the six weirdest things to fall from the sky. They also tried experiments like batter-frying a pair of eyeglasses. In the early 2010s, some of their postings had more than 10 million views. To grow their careers, Rhett and Link moved to Burbank, California. The move helped them succeed in another internet business, viral marketing. They encouraged local businesses to use the World Wide Web to gain customers in far-off places. One of the first videos to go viral was an ad for Red House Furniture in High Point. Later, they engineered digital T-shirt wars designed to put a company's name out onto the global economy. It seemed like they had invented a whole new way to make a living. As one of them explained, "We were pursuing something that doesn't exist, and then we found ourselves in it without even knowing it." That was not unlike the first explorers who had come to Roanoke Island 4 centuries before. Section 2 continued. International corporations like DuPont Chemicals and Goodyear Tire on the Cape Fear continued to be innovative in their technology and service. This helped them keep up with global change. Established North Carolina firms also adapted to the times of the early 2000s. Food Lion of Salisbury had made much of its profit from customers who worked in the traditional factories. With that customer base declining, Food Lion opened new stores under a new name, Bloom, that catered to the person on the go. The Bloom stores carried lots of ready-made food and solid packaging. Nucor, a Charlotte firm that made steel from recycled scrap metal, fought off low-priced steel from Asia by buying up old plants across the nation and putting new technology into them. Cheerwine, the Salisbury bottler, came out with a popular line of bottled water. Community revitalization. Communities also work to take advantage of global possibilities by strengthening their local assets. Infill housing, where new places to live are built in the older middles of downtowns, helped revive the core portions of Charlotte, Greensboro, and Winston-Salem in the early 2000s. By 2008, Harris Teeter had opened an uptown grocery store in Charlotte. The Main Street program assisted smaller towns like Lexington and Wilson in attracting new businesses and cultural destinations like museums. many tiny towns and crossroad hamlets continue to lose some of their older businesses and public places. Some innovative thinkers took old buildings in out-of-the-way places and turned them into entertainment destinations. A Greenville family bought an old general store in the Pitt County hamlet of Fountain and made it into a cultural heritage store full of antiques, old books, and curiosities of all types. Customers can drink coffee, share snacks, and hear traditional music. The R.A. Fountain General Store and Internet Cafe is just one of many examples of adaptive use of North Carolina's dated resources. The newer communities are also working hard to adapt to the new ways with traditional ideas. Cary in Wake County was one of the fastest growing towns in the nation in the early 2000s. Once a small suburb of Raleigh, Cary grew into a small city of its own very quickly. It went from 1 square mile to 50 in 30 years. By the new century, it was the 7th largest city in the state. Many of its residents had some connection to the new technology jobs that came to the Research Triangle Park. By 2001, Cary had taken measures to mix the old with the new. It controlled the size of signs in town to give the town a better sense of traditional scale. It also took steps to wire the whole town for internet service, the first town in the state to do so. Other communities made special efforts to stem the tide of uncontrolled construction, particularly the urban sprawl that was encircling many cities. Both in the mountains and at the beach, older residents acted on concerns about erosion caused by commercial and residential development. In 2006, the residents of Betty, a small fishing village in Carteret County near Harkers Island, formed Down East Tomorrow. Its purpose is to make sure development does not damage the coastal ecosystem. An ecosystem consists of all the living organisms in an area and how they interact with one another. Special feature: Carolina Places. East versus West, the Great Barbecue Debate. Some North Carolinians argue that the state meal is barbecue. Then, like almost everything else in our heritage, they argue about how to serve it. The Tar Heel State is world famous for the way it cooks a pig, but which way to cook it is a matter of debate. It all depends upon where you live in North Carolina. If you grew up east of the fall line, you eat eastern-style barbecue. If you are from the west, you prefer western-style, or what some folks call Lexington-style. The difference is this. Eastern barbecue is the whole pig split in two and roasted over oak coals all night. The meat is basted with a vinegar and pepper sauce. Western barbecue uses only the shoulder section of the pig, which is cooked over hickory coals. The rest of the pig is reserved for other uses, like bacon and sausage. The Western sauce has ketchup added to the vinegar and peppers. Folks in eastern towns like Goldsboro, Rocky Mount, or Greenville take their meat minced and wet with the sauce. The serving plate also has boiled potatoes and some kind of coleslaw. Folks in the west around Lexington, Greensboro, and Albemarle chop the meat more coarsely, put it on a sandwich roll, and eat it with French fries and a peppery coleslaw. Why North Carolina has two ways to cook a pig is a matter of debate. Restaurants in both sections of the state began to serve barbecue just after World War I. Adam Scott, an African-American preacher in Goldsboro, began selling barbecue on his back porch during tobacco market weeks. He soon started a restaurant, as did Bob Melton on the Tar River in Rocky Mount. About the same time, Sid Weaver and Jesse Swicegood each set up stands on the Courthouse Square in Lexington. From this start, dozens of restaurants were opened after World War II. Few North Carolina towns are without one. Residents of each section of the state have periodically argued about who cooks the pig the best, an argument no one ever wins, nor does anyone really want to. North Carolinians who love barbecue seem to want to talk about barbecue as much as they want to eat it. Historians have tended to dismiss these arguments as just another part of the endless rivalry between the two sections. Dr. Gary Fries, the author of this textbook, has suggested a genuine basis for the difference. One day, while eating Western style, he realized that the meal looked similar to food he ate in Pennsylvania Dutch country, an area still very German in its customs and tastes. He connected the taste to the fact that the first Q men in Lexington had German backgrounds. In contrast, the cooks down east were products of an English way of cooking a pig. The two styles of barbecue are based in part on ethnic differences. Dr. Freeze then sought evidence for his idea. He found a recipe back in Pennsylvania that sounded much like what is eaten in Lexington, using the same cut, the shoulder, and the same sweet sauce. Freeze's theory has been debated among barbecue eaters for years. It is hard to prove, since most folks eat up the evidence. Special feature: History by the Highway. Baden, L'Aluminum Francais. The Stanley County town of Baden was established in 1913 to house the workers at an aluminum plant. When the French owner had a difficult time during World War I, the Aluminum Company of America, usually called Alcoa, took over the town. No other community in North Carolina looks like Baden. The original French colonial-style row houses are found nowhere else. Some of the factory families continued to live in the picturesque houses into the 21st century, even after the aluminum plant ceased operations in 2003.